Professor Simon Balfi. His topic is e-approaches to destination management. The case of Sydney for all visitor accessibility in the Sydney CBD.
Hi. I'll just have to get Andrew to give me a hand with technology to do that. You'll be happy to know I'm not going to be talking about the techo side of things. That's part of what the project I was involved in is about. What I'll be talking about is, if you like, the collaborative elements that brought about the experiences that were documented, and how tourism works in a global environment, and that whenever anyone takes a trip, there's always a trepidation and anxiety there with all sorts of things. And the poor bugger sitting in the airport at the moment overseas, I can't even imagine how that is doing, because I've got some very specific requirements, and I was keeping through my head, if that happened when I'm in Hong Kong in a month's time, it would just be an absolute disaster all round. So when people go away, there's a risk. But in a disability sense, that risk is even higher, because the market that we started to talk about really hasn't engaged with the sort of information that different embodiments need when they're away from their normal place of residence. But part of what I'm going to I'm talking about is tourism specific, but it's more into a broader city accessibility, and sort of gets me back to my, in a way, professional roots. I'm qualified in the planning area. I work still as a consultant for architects, building construction. Most of the time these days I get bought in to architect people, I really enjoy doing that. From a built environment point of view, from an all sorts of angles around accessibility, but most of my work these days is in operational. So once things are up and running, what does it mean operationally so that people get a quality of experience? I'm a power wheelchair user, but this project, as with all the work I do, crosses disability dimensions. And I was really glad to hear a lot of things have been said today. It's really tricky doing stuff across dimensions of access, whether it's in a physical built environment or whether it's virtually. So I've had a crack at things that a lot of people didn't want to have a crack at, because I can see the value in doing it and getting it on the agenda. This project, we actually had an outcome, and those of us that went into it, we weren't expecting to have an outcome, because we've been dealing with government for a long time. So we thought we'd produce a really nice report, and that'd be it. But the difference was, with this project, these guys, another group called Tourism and Transport Forum, which are a big end-of-town private sector lobby group, and then the Department of Environment and Climate Change, whatever they're called now, they change their name every few months, they were part of what is the top ICON, Sustainable Tourism CRC, the Commonwealth Government funding body that's about to dissolve 30th of June. They had a pool of money that was around tourism research. And what was really nice about this was they had a level of decision making that was democratised to each state. So these industry partners actually said, we want to do something around accessibility. We know we're not doing a good job. Sydney's a gateway. And whatever we do, it'll be good for Sydney residents as well as tourists and stuff like that. So I just want to give you a little bit of context before getting into the specifics of the website. And I'll just have to sit side saddle here. Sorry, that's a little... My other partner in these things does a lot of this stuff. So I want to just have a look at the... So sort of an overview of the project itself, a little bit about accessible tourism, but the whole point of the project was to come up with an outcome, not about what isn't accessible, so it wasn't a list of what people can't do. What it was about was to provide enough information in the way that people wanted it so that somebody could make an informed decision for their needs. Royal Botanic Garden, a fantastic place, I did one of my first big mainstream research projects there. I spent a year in the garden doing all sorts of visitor studies. It's a wonderful site and it's terribly inaccessible in many, many ways. But it's got some what I call quintessential experiences. The marketers didn't like that, they didn't let me use it in the end, but I like the idea of this. What's quintessentially Sydney when you come here? Okay. So the project kicked off with those three industry partners who kicked in money to get it going. And what it was a suck and see job that we wrap up and call participatory action research, where we had a whole lot of people that we thought would be good stakeholders to be involved, and we weren't too sure how they're going to work together. Some are cultural institutions, others were commercial tour operators that we'll see in a moment. And there was so many methods. We did economic modelling. So we used tourism satellite accounts, disability ageing carers survey, and the tourism stats to actually look at the contribution of accessible tourism to as a proportion of GDP, which was 11% of the 80 billion spent in the tourism area. So not insubstantial. The government only cares about 20 billion of it because that's what comes in from overseas. So we've got these market dynamics in this project, but tourism is largely a marketing industry that would not run without government coordination. Very fragmented, so a lot of stuff's done around marketing. So the big thing from an online perspective is that the government invests significant amounts of money in the Australian Tourism Data Warehouse, which all state commissions feed their information into, and that's what becomes publicly available from all points of the globe. Not surprisingly, there's very little accessible information on that platform, and what's there is absolutely useless. I mean, you really wouldn't want to go to Condoglin and make any accessible decisions based on what's there. So I took my access auditing background and some other work we've been doing. We looked at some key enablers. Accommodation wasn't one of them, and there was a reason for that. We have had another project running on accommodation. But we used what was out there, so there's this fantastic GIS system for all accessible toilets across the country. Great project, fantastic. So we used that. We used the different mobility maps across the different areas, but we brought them together into the one spot. What people with disabilities will tell you is, you go into a travel agent and they tell you to bugger off and do it yourself. You go to Rough Guide or whatever and there's no mention of anything there. There are some good specialty stuff that's come up, and in fact everything that Lisa and Andrew have been saying about people empowering themselves through the new technologies has really come out in this way. There's a guy called Scott Rains from out of San Francisco who has this brilliant little report called the Rolling Rains Report. And he's a networker, and he networks across all areas, and he's constantly travelling, doing all sorts of development work in nations across the world. Really interesting stuff, Rolling Rains Report. So we were hoping to get to a point where we would mock up a website and hope they'd come on board. And these were the guys that did come on board. So there's a good mixture of commercial, private sector, big cultural institutions, and a lot of them were very fearful because a lot of them know they do things not particularly well. And I'll give one example of that in a moment. But most of them do some things brilliantly, access-wise. So what this project was about was not beating them to death with a stick, which is what I normally do in when I'm being a consultant. But this was about saying, this is to be celebrated, and we're going to open it up to a new market to you, because most of them are very inward in who their stakeholders are. So this was looking at opening it up to a new market segment. So they were pretty interested about that. So the underlying philosophy goes back to a lot of universal design approaches, and universal design is tricky, and it's tricky for all sorts of reasons. But it was tricky in this sense because we weren't working with perfectly new environments. We were dealing with, you know, the rocks and the opera house and the botanic garden. So, you know, they're not perfect environments. So we wanted to focus on the quintessential experiences, hook it back into the experience economy, which those of you that have come across it, it's sort of a linchpin area where it says that every service is a performance. And that hooked in very well with the Commonwealth tourism policy at the time. So we're focusing on what people could do, and we're doing it within the building guidelines and the standards for accessibility. So we had that framework that was there. So that's sort of the context. And there is a much broader, when you're talking to different industries, you've got to talk their language. A good colleague of ours, Demetrius Solaris from Bournemouth University, regularly consults with the industry out here, and we look at destination competitiveness and sustainability, which Richie and Crouch first put up. And there's some really key areas within that, I'll give you the full report, but there's some really key areas to access disability and diversity within that, and that's what our leverage was. Look, if you want to remain competitive in a baby booming market, then you need to engage with these areas. So that's sort of the context, and I'll get mainly onto the main part now. So there's all sorts of definitions. What we wanted to do was have a gateway in Europe. A very good group of researchers came up with a one-stop shop for accessible tourism. Europe, that's now morphed into Europe for All, and also the European Network for Accessible Tourism. And the EU money was fairly substantial to get that up and running. And can you imagine, 16 countries, 16 different states of building codes, access was, you know, it was quite a nightmare. So once we had the experiences, we wanted to highlight it in a place where people could access it, comply to W3C, and of course, virtually none of the New South Wales government websites in any sense. So we were getting a bit iffy there for a while, but I had sort of 12 years experience working with that organisation as both a researcher, a consultant, and also sitting on a bunch of advisory boards for them. And they committed to build a new website, not a new Tourism New South Wales website, but a specific website for the project, to use it as a test of accessibility criteria and how that might be received by the market. So they put in substantial resources, a wonderful techo, Helen Edwards, came on board and worked with us and all the stakeholders to get the system up and running. So they're the different experience bubbles, and we wanted to try and capture some things. Sydney, so you had Ferry, fish and chips, Manly, all that sort of stuff. But also some things that people might even think of that's quite simple. The Katajamora First Encounters Indigenous Storyboard, which is in the gardens, free experience, but very good mobility, people that are deaf, it's all out there in front of you. There's some brilliant stuff going on at Sydney Theatre Company and Sydney Opera House with audible, accessible performances. So they, for people that, somebody that's blind, they, before the performance goes on, they get them on stage, orientate them on stage, get a feel for what's going to occur during it, and then they're live described with I'm not sure of all the technology, but an infrared take the, somebody sits up in the production box and gives them a spatial representation in an audible sense. Terrific stuff. New South Wales Art Gallery do after-hours Ausland tours, and that's done of all current exhibitions. It's oversubscribed and they keep extending that. They also do some brilliant stuff with kids with a variety of autistic spectrum disorder around touch and feel with the gallery as well. So lots of good stuff, and that's what we put. We've taken these experiences and we've created a way for those experiences to be represented on a website. So just to give you an example, Art Gallery in New South Wales, I just gave them a deep wrap. Well, every time I go to the Art Gallery in New South Wales, I've got to go down the back access service road, dodge the trucks, come up to the back exit where everybody's hanging around having a smoke, and then go in the door that way. So we, Edward Capon has been proactive in recognising that their mobility access is crap, and a lot of the time it's the sensory access that's not particularly good. In this case, the mobility is not, and they're engaging with it, but obviously with a heritage building there's a lot of preciousness that goes with it. Most people that have travelled through Europe have noted that they've been able to deal with that now. But in Australia, you know, we're pretty uptight about our heritage, or at least the European heritage, not so much the Indigenous heritage. So what we did, simple framework, facilitators, enablers, constraints, innovation solutions. So we did this with each of the organisations. And most of the organisations have got some form of disability action plan, except for the smaller commercials. And working with the smaller commercials is actually a lot of good fun. They're generally one-person operators, mum and dad businesses, and they were taking a risk being involved, and they've some of them have had good commercial payoffs. So the audience needs you guys. You know, I with talks like this, I'm never too sure how simple to make it, but we've spoken a lot about JAWS screen readers and things like that, but a lot of the time there's some lip service paid around the alt text description on pictures. So what we wanted to do was create a little bit of a richness in those areas that needed a richness. Because, you know, tourism is supposed to be about, you know, this get away from it experience, etc. We wanted to make sure that there was a recognition of seniors within that context. We also wanted to make sure that people with different cognitive considerations were there, and also that people that may have been family members or carers or paid attendants were also incorporated within that. So the website design, we had a go at each of those issues. We steered away from video because we didn't think it was something we could solve in a project and a prototype project at that. And we went through all the, you know, international guidelines, etc., etc. Helen built it from the ground up. And that's sort of what the front page looks like. Vision Australia were brought in as an external consultant to do what I do and feed us up if we were getting it right. And we got very good feedback from them and some pointers on how to do some improvements. It's a fairly... I have this conversation with graphic designers quite often. From a graphic design point of view, it's a bit boring. But from a usability point of view, it's pretty good. So it's a trade-off in that sense. So the big things that can be done is that the text can be resized to whatever size you want. And the frames all jump back into place with that. Secondly, the contrast, that there's a series of different screens, and I'll bring it up live in a moment. I might get Andrew to do steering on that when we do it. And we build in the alt text and those other things that are there as well. I'll just click through one or two slides. So the pilot kicked off in sort of start of 2008, and we're still going with it. One of the things we were very particular around was stating what the icons meant. And the icons weren't about saying, yeah, this is a tick job for you. The icons just drew your attention to those experiences that might be accessible for whatever your needs happen to be. So then you're able to click into that experience and read through the experience, or the screen reader goes through it for you. And we took something like 1,000 photos when we were doing the project as well. And that's a resource that we haven't really used enough at the moment. There's other features that are there too for different types of keyboard users, etc. as well. So I'll just click on one or two more things. We also built in a survey feedback mechanism into it. I knew after it was open for about a month that we'd done a pretty good job, because you don't do a good job in the disability sector, you hear about it endlessly. And I didn't have any irate phone calls or people having a go. I got some nice phone calls and I got some nice feedback on SurveyMonkey. SurveyMonkey is compliant to Section 508 in the American system. It's not brilliant, but it was the best as we could do for an online. But we gave five other options for completing the survey as well. And that's all that's been an interesting exercise. So, Zip Over, they're the project partners. And we're running at about 17,000 visits from about 120 countries. And this is with no marketing at all, because it's not an official site. This is all through my no-cost marketing of using disability networks, etc. The major issue has been we haven't had new content since it started, but City of Sydney have now funded two projects, so there'll be a new accommodation module going online, and we're extending it out to the precinct of Darling Harbour, and we're also extending it to the project called the Accessible Alpine Tourism Project, which a friend of mine, Tracy Dixon, with a regional tourism development grant that got seven times the amount of money we did this one on, has got a fantastic resource. So we're seeing it as a bit of a hub that we'll keep rolling out when we're successful with getting money. So Andrew, if you'd like to just bring up the site, and just go back to the front page and just click on. Yep. And I too have had similar experiences in UTS when we've clicked on things and they, for whatever reason, they're not running in the world. But it should come up on the stocks.
Why wasn't UTS on the list of things you must see in Sydney?
In fact, Market Campus is in the Lonely Planet Guide, and that's why we had an increase. People looking to have a shower and check their emails there a few years ago. No, it's not coming up very slowly. Okay, just yep. So if you come down to Art Gallery in New South Wales and just click on it, click on the link there. It then goes into a lot more detail for each of the experiences, and we made sure that there was outdoor experiences, cultural experiences, classic sightseeing experiences, but everything's couched in a very positive way. Like I didn't say for wheelchair users, you know, you've got to go to the back entrance and avoid the cigarette butts and, you know, all those sorts of things. It's couched in a positive. It's a collaborative marketing exercise for those guys that have been involved. And one of them is a very small operator that does audio assisted tours of the rocks, but did it so it was wheelchair accessible. Terrific stuff.
Yeah. Where's that tool that makes the text bigger or smaller?
Oh yeah, that resides at the top of the page.
Oh, okay. So
change text size. You go back to home or whatever.
Yeah,
change text size. And it takes you into a different page.
What's the largest one?
Yep. And if you go back now, Andrew, to home, and then that comes through, all the contrasts are there as well. And we were very happy. Vision Australia, you know, we were lucky enough to pick up one of their nice little awards they give out each year, which was good. I was very happy also that we were up for a nomination for a World Leisure Award for the approach we've taken, not so much. There's some really nice stuff in Spain and Europe, actually, that have done a terrific job on all this stuff. But more the approach and the engagement that we did for it, that we weren't going to those people who are always doing it. Lisa spoke about cultural change. It's been a cultural change for each of the stakeholders. It's also been a cultural change for tourism New South Wales, so they're incorporating some of these features in their next version. But tourism runs on flash and all sorts of stuff, and that's a real trick around it. And in fact, it's interesting, even our Papua Business job, Business 21C, and all the flash things that we did, I was the first person that asked for a clip to be captioned. So, you know, even within the innovative, creative environment that our faculty is, these things are only just starting to crack the barrier. So, thanks very much.